WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, and Lisa Nichols with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. Write those numbers down. Dial them into your phone. Call in. Be a part of the show. We love to hear from our listeners. Coming up later tonight, we're going to be taking a look at the controversy over the Donald Trump election. Controversy? I use that word with air quotes around it. Controversy? Is there controversy?
Yep.
The media would have you think so, but maybe there isn't as much controversy as they would like us to believe. Lisa Nichols.
He's been on a tweeting war rampage.
Oh, boy. I think what's going to happen is instead of the radio address that we used to get from past presidents, we're just going to get a tweet. Like, it will be the Saturday presidential tweet.
Yes.
And then the Democrats will have to respond in 140 characters or less.
Yeah, well, he said it was a big waste of time for him to go every single day to, you know, a national security briefing. Maybe he just wants it tweeted at him for everybody to see.
Yeah.
So everybody knows what's going on.
That works for me. I will gladly...
I want a little intel on... the workings of Washington.
Yeah, throw that up on Twitter. I want to know.
I mean, aren't we all about transparency here?
I want to know what the threats are.
Yeah,
absolutely want to know what the threats are.
Of course.
This is different because it's been a month since it's just been you and I.
Mm-hmm. You and me
alone together in the studio, staring deeply into each other's eyes.
Yes.
Yeah,
back at it.
It's been a month.
I feel the fever growing.
We finally got that damn Shay out of here.
No, it was nice having her for a couple weeks.
It is. And with a little bit of luck, we might have her back in the studio again before the end of the year. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that. You've still got empty Kim promises.
Yes.
That you have to deliver upon.
I don't know if she's listening tonight. But yeah, my best friend Kim, she will be on the show eventually. I think the Oscar show will be when she'll make her debut.
Yeah, your Kim promises are in the same category as my wife's waffle promises. There are a lot of them.
Yeah, but the thing is, you have the waffle maker. It's just you don't have the product.
My waffle maker is named Molly, and it's broken. That's what's going on with my waffle maker.
See what you do there? Now I'm going to get angry text messages from your wife.
Yeah, better you than me. That's all I can say to that. What do we got going on in this wacky world, Lisa Nichols?
Well, today in local news, we learned when the state has no money, you got to ask for a raise. Legislative leaders have revived a controversial proposal to give themselves and other state officials a sizable raise at a time when Massachusetts faces persistent budget gaps and most residents' wages are growing relatively slowly. State lawmakers said that they will hold a hearing on the issue on Thursday, a sign that pay raises could be gaining traction more than 2 years after advisory commission recommended dramatic salary increases for state officials and top lawmakers. The proposal will cost the state of Massachusetts about $934,000 annually. Lawmakers in the tightly controlled legislature will be unlikely to schedule a hearing on the issue and risk a backlash unless it has some intent on moving forward with the plan. The announcement was made by House Speaker Robert DeLeo and Senate President Stanley Rosenberg, whose pay could jump more than 70% from $102,000 to $175,000 if the commission's recommendations are passed into law. The last pay raise on Beacon Hill was at 4.19% bump, which was granted last month under constitutional amendment that ties the salaries of the legislatures and officials with changes in state medium income. Before that, the last pay raise of 5.6% was in 2009. Although the most recent raise was also applied to constitutional officers, Charlie Baker and Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito opted not to accept the additional pay.
I love that they go out and they get this independent commission to study it and recommend the raises.
You know who pays for those.
Yeah, the taxpayers do.
Yes.
But this is...
taxpayer dollars going towards these special committees to decide if we should use more tax dollars to pay these lawmakers.
But this is a little duck and cover operation by the lawmakers. Because basically they go out and they hire these consultants to come in and say, well, your lawmakers are underpaid, so that the lawmakers themselves aren't the ones making this claim. And once again, I will say, who cares? Okay? Are we going to lose fabulous, dedicated public servants like Jason Lewis and Tim DeLeo if they don't get a raise? No. Because the alternative for these guys is they have to go and get real jobs. And none of them want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They don't deserve a raise. They shouldn't get a raise. The answer from the voters should be no. Especially a 70% raise for these clowns? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
No, I mean, again, this is why, and we say it so many times on the show, this is why we need term limits. You have these people that have been on Beacon Hill for so many years. And, you know, it's no more lifetime jobs, no more huge pensions that are creating a huge problem here in the Bay State, but no more. Done with it. I mean, you have a state that in Massachusetts, one third of residents are either on Medicaid or qualify for it.
Yeah.
Oh, you're doing a fantastic job. You know, I mean, can we enrich their pensions anymore? Here's my proposal. How about all these people? Yeah, you'll get a raise, but why don't you have to take public transportation, though, with the people? People pay for your job, commute with the people. Oh, no. Then you're going to realize that in Boston, you can't get around. Oh, the commuter rail doesn't work? Yeah, that's state funding. State funding that you're now trying to take to enrich your lives with a pay raise.
Here's the way this should work. You get a raise, but the value of your raise is deducted from social programs in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. That's the choice they should have to make, which is you guys get an extra $100 million a year. That's $100 million a year we're taking out of the WIC program, mm-hmm. and then we're taking out of welfare, and then we're taking out of all of our other programs for the poor.
And having,
because that's the net effect of mm-hmm. it. That's what it is.
And do you think these people will be voted back into their position? Knowing that, this person in legislature, they opted to have a raise, but yeah, we're going to just take out a couple $1 million from WIC.
Yeah.
We're going to let a few babies, you know, starve.
Here's the thing. I don't see any kind of great exit, as I said before, I don't see any kind of great exodus of talent from Beacon Hill.
No, because it's the same people underpaid. That have been there.
They're not going anywhere. The reason you raise people's salaries is so that you can be competitive against other businesses, okay? That's why you get a raise. Mm-hmm. Not because you're doing a good job, not because everybody else is making more money, but because the company needs to keep you around because you are valuable. And if they don't give you enough money, you are going to go someplace else to get more money.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that works.
If we're looking at other states comparatively, Massachusetts is one of the, if not the highest, what the money that they're putting out on Beacon Hill.
Yeah. These guys, they're overpaid to begin with. All right. Listen, they should get paid. I'm not going to argue that they should get paid, but really they should
get. But I mean, a 70% increase, is that, am I crazy to say that's a little like astronomical?
Really, they should get paid. Like your rank and file representatives and your rank and file senators should get paid at the median state income level. Mm-hmm. Whatever the median state income level, that's what you get paid. And then you have an incentive to try and raise the median state income level if you want to make more money. Okay? If you're a speaker, if you're a chairman or something like that, you know, you get 10% more mm-hmm. per position that you have. And if you're the speaker, maybe we'll give you a double.
No, and that's why I do agree with the, you know, last month when they had the constitutional amendment that said the salaries of legislators and officials needs to change with the state median income.
Yeah.
So yes, exactly as you just pointed out, state median income goes up, then your pay goes up. Essentially what that means is you're doing a good job in fulfilling the promises of your constituents.
It's getting hard for me to hear these horror stories about our legislators sleeping in their cars and living hand to mouth mm-hmm. and their children living in shelters and starving. Oh, yeah, it's getting hard for me to hear those stories because they don't exist. Mm-hmm. They are more than well compensated enough.
But we wouldn't want them to suffer anymore once you're done feeding at the public trough.
Right, but notice
that is sitting on top of, you know, City Hall.
Notice that all of this is done with zero input from the voters. Zero input from the voters. And really, if you want to raise...
No, because only the votes matter when it's for the benefit of the people on Beacon Hill. Oh, we don't like what's being passed. Oh, we need a referendum because we need the people to vote. Well, this is what the people want to vote.
Yeah.
They want to make sure that the people that are in office have the best interests of the citizens of the Commonwealth.
Scoundrels.
And it's not happening.
Scoundrels.
But this has been going on for years. Is it ever going to change? I don't know.
No. No, this is they're always going to try and get
because,
more money.
I mean, Charlie Baker and Karen Pulido sitting there, oh, well, I didn't take a pay raise. We're good. They're the ones that are allowing all this to happen because all of this can be vetoed by them.
Yeah.
But it's not.
Scoundrels. Every last one of them. Scoundrels. National news. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange will not be turning himself over to U.S. authorities. Assange, who remains trapped in the Ecuadorian embassy in London, offered to turn himself in if whistleblower Chelsea Manning was given clemency. President Obama commuted Manning's sentence yesterday, but Assange backed off on his promise because Manning's release did not take place immediately. Obama defended Manning's commutation, noting that she received a harsher sentence than other government whistleblowers. Republicans, of course, are all been out of show. How can you let Chelsea go? Chelsea probably should have been let go a long time ago.
Yeah, the attorney for Assange, he's saying that Obama's commutation of Chelsea Manning's sentence doesn't meet the conditions of WikiLeaks ahead that he was offered to be extradited to the United States. I feel like there's such this negative connotation to Assange, and obviously it had to do with the election and pointing fingers to him and saying that he was giving information to Russia, which in fact all he really did was point out the incompetency of the Democratic Party and help supplement that.
I think, by the way, 2 points for Julian Assange, who played Barack Obama beautifully in this. I mean, that's really... I don't know that that promise played a role in getting the commutation for Chelsea Manning, but I suspect it did.
I was going to say, do you think that he did that knowing that we were going to get Assange?
I think Assange did that knowing that Obama would turn around and give clemency to Chelsea Manning and he could just walk back the promise.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly what happened here because Julian Assange is smarter than most of the people who are opposed to him. He's proven this over and over and over again.
I'll absolutely agree with
that. He's not smart enough to treat women with respect, which is a huge black mark for Mr. Assange, but he is smarter than most of the people who've come after him.
Mm-hmm. Now, so what's next? I mean, do you think that obviously Trump's not going to go after him? Where do we stand with him?
You know, the interesting thing about this is I don't know that Trump couldn't go in and reverse that decision.
With regards to Chelsea Manning?
Yeah. Obama can't because he's already granted clemency. But I don't know that presidential pardons, I think they are absolute.
I'm almost sure that
I believe they are.
It's a final word.
But that's not to say that somebody somewhere couldn't figure out a reason to keep Chelsea Manning in jail now if they wanted to. Ultimately, I think just let Chelsea Manning go.
That was one of the questions that was asked by a reporter today in one of the final, I don't even know if it's speech, but one of the press conferences with Obama and saying, by commuting Chelsea Manning, do you believe that we're saying that it's okay that you were risking Americans' lives? That essentially that's what he did.
Yeah.
He gave out information on a mission that was happening. What was that, Iraq?
Somewhere in the midst of the diplomatic cables that he released, there was information that could have been used to identify U.S. operatives in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what that comes down to.
Which is essentially a big no-no, yes.
That is an act of treason, by the way. However, in the context in which Chelsea Manning did it, it was really more of a whistleblowing activity.
Mm-hmm.
We never came down hard on Chelsea Manning on this show back when this happened several years ago because Chelsea Manning was basically poking his finger in the eye of the Pentagon and saying, you guys are lying about everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was back in 2010. And I think what he said when he did, or she, wanted to have some sort of discussion and some sort of talks with what was happening.
Yeah. And this is not the way that you go about being a whistleblower. I do not like to see whistleblowers prosecuted.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I did not like to see Chelsea Manning prosecuted. I don't think any lasting damage was done. Well, what Edward Snowden did to our surveillance capabilities was far worse
than
what Chelsea Manning did.
perfect transition because I was going to ask you, what are your feelings with the difference between Chelsea Manning and Edward Snowden? Because a lot of people are saying, you know, how can you do this to Chelsea Manning and not to Snowden?
I am a free Snowden guy. Team free Snowden. All right? Snowden's American hero as far as I'm concerned. I know the Pentagon doesn't like him. I know the CIA doesn't like him. I know the British Secret Service and everybody else who was illegally spying on the American people doesn't like him. But that guy did the world a huge public service.
Absolutely. But the U.S. government and Obama administration wants you to believe that that was treason. And what he did, he was so anti-American, which for you and I who have discussed this on the show and really picked apart what he discovered, or not what he discovered, what he showed Americans that the government was doing to every single individual.
Yeah.
And that it is shameful.
Well, the argument they make about Snowden is that he's in the hands of an enemy of the United States. Mm-hmm. You know, because he sought refuge in Russia, where he was pretty confident they would take him in, he's working with the enemy, and he's given our secrets to the enemy. There is no evidence of this at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are the same people, by the way, who lied about who Edward Snowden was, who lied about his background, made him sound like he was some idiot that they had brought in off the street to run a computer system, when in fact he was a highly trained analyst working for a well-known CIA front.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't take anything that comes out of Washington seriously. The reality is they're still angry with Edward Snowden in ways that they aren't still angry with Chelsea Manning. So Chelsea gets to go home. Snowden really should get to go home. But
now, has Trump really been vocal about his feelings on Snowden? Because that will be an interesting, I mean, with all of this coming up in Chelsea Manning, that not that there's pressure to either have Snowden extra, obviously want him, but to give pardon to him.
Apart from towing the Pentagon line, no, not really.
Mm-hmm.
Not really.
It's just a whatever.
I don't think Barack Obama's feelings necessarily align with the CIA and the Pentagon on this one, but he's gone along with what they've said.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't disputed it. He hasn't argued it. He's followed their talking points to the letter. So if he personally has a different feeling about it, which I suspect he does, we have no idea what it is. Such is life. In world news, UK Prime Minister Theresa May has laid out terms for her country's departure from the European Union, a process that is expected to begin in March. May outlined 12 priorities for negotiations with the EU, including control of UK borders, freedom from the jurisdiction of the EU Court of Justice, an exit from the EU's single market, and an end to significant contributions to the EU central budget, though she did not rule out contributions for specific programs. May warned EU members that they risked, quote, calamitous self-harm, end quote, if they did not negotiate in good faith, and vowed to put the final deal with Europe to a vote before Parliament. She also said
talking about Brexit.
She also said that if Parliament blocks it, that's not going to stand. So it's kind of a symbolic vote that Parliament's going to get on
Brexit
this one.
Brexit was one of those buzzwords that everybody was talking about in 2016. And, you know, it's the end of times for the European Union. And forget it, England's never going to last on its own. What she's saying is obviously not going to take place in a week and in a month. And
2 years.
2 years. And also it needs to be passed by British Parliament. So it's not the most simplest terms of what she's laying out. It's interesting how she breaks it down into, you know, obviously the financial situation is very important. But another thing that she said was talking about they want to have controls of their borders.
Yeah.
So we're in a time where over the past year, basically everybody in the EU has rolled out the red carpet for millions of migrants and refugees that are coming from mostly Syria. And we know the problems that have been going on in multiple countries. Look at what's happening in Germany. Nobody can be supported that's originally from there because all the money is going to these refugees. This is what England or UK is saying. We want control of the borders.
The border control situation in the United Kingdom is a little bit different because they're not accepting any of these refugees. They've accepted
a tiny
number of them.
Blockades.
It is more a question of if you are a naturalized citizen, of any EU country. You can go live in any other EU country that you want to.
Yes.
And as a result of that, lots and lots of people from the poorer EU countries, places like Hungary, have chosen to settle in the United Kingdom, which has very generous social programs.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's paying money in back and forth for this, but what's happened is entire neighborhoods and entire sections of the United Kingdom are now immigrant havens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the people who live in the United Kingdom are sitting there saying, why do we have all of these people from other parts of Europe using our social services and taking over these neighborhoods? That's not working for
us. Sounds very familiar, Derek.
That was a major component of the No campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The possibility of Syrian migrants and African migrants being tossed into the United Kingdom was another big component of the No campaign. Ultimately, what it comes down to is Theresa May is saying to the European Union, you need us more than we need you. And that was always, I said this when Brexit happened, that was always going to be the United Kingdom's position, which is, you guys without us have much bigger problems.
Mm-hmm.
Than we have without you.
No, because, of course, the UK is one of the biggest financial hubs.
Exactly.
Of the world.
Exactly. And while banks can make symbolic movements all day long and say, oh, we're moving 1,400 people to France, we're moving 500 people to Germany, the reality is all of the infrastructure that powers the global financial system is concentrated in a handful of places. It is in New York. It is in London. It is in Singapore. It is in Tokyo. It is in it's in Berlin. Those five financial hubs can't ever move.
Mm-hmm.
Because the amount of investment required to do that and the amount of disruption it would cause would bring the global financial network to a standstill.
Of course. Look how many companies in the United States are creating their headquarters in the UK.
Yeah.
Because of, you know, you get away from taxes and it's...
If you want to see firsthand what that would look like, take a look at what happened to global financial markets after 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
Because New York was taken offline. That was one of Osama bin Laden's goals, was to disrupt the global financial network. And he did, because he managed to shut New York down for a week. And global markets went into a free fall after that because nobody can trade any American companies.
Mm-hmm.
All of Europe's stocks are either listed in London or in Berlin, one of those two places. So you can't just undo that overnight and expect the thing's going to go on.
So essentially, with Brexit happening, because there was so much backing the yes movement and saying we need to stay with the EU because we need, I mean, that's what they were pushing, the message from the people in the United Kingdom. They were like, we can't leave because we need the EU. And essentially, the EU needs the United Kingdom. Now they hold the upper hand.
Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. Basically, they want out
of... Does that give them a position of maybe requesting more?
Well, they want out of the central market. They want out of the single market.
I think they're going to be successful at.
They want out of the customs zone, but they want free movement of goods back and forth into and out of the single market.
Mm-hmm.
That is going to be the thing that European leaders can jump on to try and extract some concessions out of the United Kingdom. In the bigger picture, Donald Trump is going to play a huge role, or should I say a huge role, in what happens in these negotiations. Because right now, the United Kingdom is free to negotiate with anybody they want to. If they can come up with a free trade deal with the United States and implement it quickly, as in within the next 6 to 8 months, then that is going to have the European Union back on their heels in terms of negotiating with the United Kingdom.
Okay, now give me an example. So before Brexit, we had a situation where UK wanted to trade goods. They had to follow under European Union standards.
They didn't.
So they could only go to certain countries and That was it.
They didn't negotiate the trade deals. The European central government did. Mm-hmm. And the United Kingdom had to go along with whatever the European central government decided. That was a condition of being a part of the single market. You may remember that there was the Canada-EU trade deal.
Yes.
That we talked about this past fall. And there were a group of farmers in the south of Belgium that were holding up the deal because there was something about milk tariffs that had them unhappy. And this group of farmers in this tiny village was essentially holding the rest of the European Union hostage to their demands. This was post-Brexit. Mm-hmm. So the United Kingdom could sit there and laugh at this, but for the rest of the European Union, it's not a laughing matter because that's what you have to deal with.
But now post-Brexit, we can say they essentially they want to be able to trade with any country that they want.
Correct. Correct. They are now free to go out.
So by you saying the United States will have a major impact on that and Trump's decision to get involved with that, why? Because currently the United Kingdom can't trade with us?
The United Kingdom, no, they can't.
Because the European Union did not allow that.
Correct. The trade agreement that exists between the European Union and the United States includes the United Kingdom right now. Mm-hmm. The United Kingdom, now that Brexit has taken place, is free because in March they're going to trigger the exit.
But we can't trade with them because then we would be breaking the agreement between us and the United European Union.
Once they trigger the exit in March, they are now free to the old EU rules in theory stay in effect until they formally leave the union. Mm-hmm. Practically, once they trigger the exit, they are free to go out and negotiate with anybody they want to. And I think number one on the list is going to be the United States. Number two on the list is going to be Russia, because what is happening for those who are too busy dealing with divisive social issues to pay attention is a massive realignment of power and influence across the world. And the old model, the Barack Obama, George Soros, Angela Merkel model, was the United States and Europe and a couple of Asian nations were going to be in charge of everything. And we were going to set the policies for the world. And we were going to tell everybody else in the world what to do. That didn't quite work out because the globalists got in there and basically looted the coffers, offshored all the jobs, took jobs away from people, filled cities and towns with immigrants. And the people sat back and said, what are we getting out of this? Nothing. So they threw those leaders up. The new reality is much closer relations between the United States, Russia, and the United Kingdom. Those three countries are going to form the nexus of whatever comes next.
Mm-hmm. But is also the new reality a situation where we have more countries following suit of what Brexit was all about and kind of putting their hands up and saying, we're sick of this? I mean, there were possibilities of Greece doing it. Scotland tried to do it.
The European Union is not going to go down without a fight. Scotland still is rumbling about breaking off from the United Kingdom and going back to the European Union.
Well, they're still threatening all of their offshore gas that they have.
Which puts some pressure on England and London to get it right. Mm-hmm. Because if they can demonstrate value to Scotland, then Scotland will calm down and say, you know what? No, we're better off here. If the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia can get on the same page economically and politically, which should not be a difficult thing to do, really should not be a difficult thing to do. We have more in common across these three countries than we have that separates us. We also have a very common enemy, which is China. And that is a big concern in all of this.
Well, look at what China's been doing over the past year, just with regards to the financial market. It's interesting, though, how you point out the United States, United Kingdom, and Russia need to be connected. We would not even be having this conversation if this was last year.
If
that possibility with the leaders that were in place, absolutely not. With President-elect Trump coming in and then working with Putin, but then also having a new prime minister, and with Theresa May in the United Kingdom, that's actually plausible.
This is, and this is one of the problems that we have, is part of the Obama-Soros plan was to continue to marginalize Russia. You're only going to marginalize Russia so far before Russia is going to lash out and do something, such as annex Crimea. Okay? Russia, everybody sits around and says, oh, Russia's our enemy, and you can't trust the Russians, and the Russians are bad, and the Russians are this and that. You know what the Russians are? The Russians are white people who are more conservative than the average conservative American. That's who the Russians are, okay? You want to talk about Putin? You want to talk about the fact that Putin is ex-KGB and backed by the Russian mob and all the hijinks that go on over there? Sure. Okay? You want to talk about what the CIA in the United States is up to? We could talk about that, too. The reality is that Russia, for all of its size and all of its power, is a nation of terrified people. They are afraid of the Germans, and now they are afraid of the Chinese. And they have got to find an alliance somewhere to alleviate that terror. If the United Kingdom is not part of the European Union, then Russia can strike deals with the United Kingdom without Germany benefiting.
Mm-hmm.
And that minimizes the German threat. If you can get on the same page with the United States, you've essentially squeezed Germany out of it. The net result of that is Germany has to come to the table. Those three countries form an alliance. Germany has to get on board. And in order for Germany to get on board, it may have to dissolve the European Union.
I was just going to say, they need to take a back seat and not be so upfront.
Because a lot of what Germany has done in the European Union in the last 15 years...
They basically controlled the EU.
And particularly in the last 5 years, has been for the benefit of Germany at the expense of the other members of the European Union. Mm-hmm. Why did Angela Merkel invite a million immigrants to her country? Because she needs the workforce to support the retirees. Because Germany's social system is upside down right now. They have too many pensioners and not enough workers to support them. That is a big problem. And inviting a million Muslims into the country was a way to solve that problem. Well, anybody from the outside looking in could have seen that that solution would not work. And it did not work.
Look at the state of what Germany and most of the European Union is in right now.
Given time, it may work, but it's not going to happen overnight. It's going to take time for them to figure out who wants to be there, who's going to contribute to that economy, and get rid of the people that won't.
Yeah, but look at the position that it put the European Union in just for selfish enhancements for the country.
There is a tremendous amount of resentment.
Didn't work.
In other European countries. Over this issue.
Of course, because they're taking in hundreds of thousands of people at the cost of their citizens.
Yeah. And this is just the latest in a series of issues. Greece is upset with Germany. Italy is upset with Germany. Spain is upset with Germany. France is still on board for whatever reasons. But Germany is increasingly isolated. And if major trade agreements can be struck between the United States, the United Kingdom, and Russia, within the next 2 years, which is a very definite possibility, if we can stop listening to all of this anti-Russian hysteria that floods our media daily from people who quite frankly ought to know better. I'm not talking about the media because they're dumb. I'm talking about our elected officials in Washington. We were all walking around saying Russia's our greatest enemy and Russia's going to destroy.
Of course, because that's it. That's the narrative that they've been pushing for the past, especially over the past election cycle.
Let me give you three enemies of the United States, listeners. You're smart people. I'll give you three enemies of the United States. You tell me which one is our number one enemy. North Korea, China, and Russia. Which one of those three countries do you think is our number one enemy?
Ooh, pick me. I'm going to go with China.
I will tell you that Russia on that list is number three.
Yeah.
And if I throw some more countries in there, we can keep moving Russia down the list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Russia wants...
But no. I mean, media Washington, you can go on. They want you to think that Russia is enemy number one.
I seem to recall after Barack Obama's re-election, there was going to be a pivot to Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And you know why the pivot to Russia didn't happen? Because Hillary Clinton sponsored a coup in Ukraine and turned Putin against the United States.
And you wonder why Putin did not like Hillary Clinton.
I don't know why Putin would be angry about that.
That's so strange.
I don't know why sponsoring a coup would upset a foreign leader, but...
Allegedly, though.
I guess it does. Yeah, that is, I should say, allegedly.
Yeah.
But when the word...
Never proven.
When the word allegedly and the CIA get thrown into the same sentence, you're not dealing with fake news. You're dealing with plausible deniability, and those are very different things. This is WMFO Medford.
Well, today in sports, we learned it's not locker room talk if everyone else hears it. Following the Steelers' 18-16 victory over the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday night, Antonio Brown let his self-awareness curtain drop and decided to fire up a Facebook Live video from the locker room. He did so in the middle of Mike Tomlin's speech that was intended to fire up the Steelers players ahead of the AFC Championship against Patriots. Tomlin and a player who sounded like Ben Roethlisberger referred to the Pats as a-holes. And multiple people could be heard yelling and not wanting the video to get on social media. Roethlisberger referred to the video as water under the bridge. Coach Tomlin, who showed anger on Tuesday when asked about the Browns' decision to broadcast from the Steelers' locker room for 15 minutes, he called it foolish and selfish. Quote, as a parent and member of the community, I take this very seriously. I issue an apology in that regard. It was foolish of Brown to do that, selfish and inconsiderate. It was a violation of our league policy, Tomlin said. Brown could be fined by the NFL for firing up social media within 90 minutes of the game ending. Yeah. Is he actually going to be fined? Who knows?
He probably will be. But yeah. Tomlin was pissed.
Yeah.
But not happy. But it's not,
but again,
just...
And just to lay out, that is NFL rules. this imaginary rule book that they, don't have written down.
But it's not just that Tomlin was pissed. Tomlin was embarrassed.
Mm-hmm.
Go online and watch the press conference and see the look in that man's eyes. That is a deer caught in the headlights who doesn't know which way to turn.
No, that was a... Oops, I can't believe you heard me saying that.
Yeah.
Because in many regards, these players, they carry themselves or have mutual respect. But when you're in a situation where you are trying to fire up your team, there's many things that you are going to say about your opponent or about your competition that, yes, you don't necessarily agree with. You may say Tom Brady's, a pansy or something stupid like that, but you have respect for him as a player. You just say it in the moment. And I think that was a situation of what had happened. They won a game. They know that they were going on to next Sunday and playing in the AFC Championship against the Patriots, which is a huge team. They're going to say things to get the team riled up.
Here's the thing. I watch Inside the NFL every week. They have cameras in the locker room after the game. Sometimes they have the coaches mic'd up. I've never heard a coach say that to a team after a game.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this is Mike Tomlin's style, and that's why they don't put the microphones. You know, the coaches know when the cameras are on them, and they're going to talk differently than when the cameras aren't on them.
The Steelers have always been known, even if it's not just against the Patriots, that they've had words about other teams, and Tomlin's been very vocal.
Yeah.
I mean, he's one of those coaches. It's not like Belichick, who really doesn't go too far into depth other than the game situation.
Well, Tomlin also once tripped a gunner on the sidelines. So, Tomlin's...
Win by all means.
The thing about it is...
Competitive advantage.
Tomlin already has a little bit of a cloud hanging over him from people who don't like the Steelers, and this is just another reason for people not to like the Steelers, because... Everything that we ever see about coaches after a game in the locker room is pumping the team up and saying, here we go, we got one more to go, and, mm-hmm. we're going to go get those guys. Not, we're coming for you, and we're going to get your ass, and they're a bunch of a-holes and everything else that Tomlin said in that video. Antonio Brown is a young and excitable boy who hopefully has learned his lesson from this.
But, come on. That's your first... instinct to let me put this all on Facebook Live.
That's like I say, he is a...
Because, there's a difference between, would you ever see Tom Brady doing that? Would you ever see any of these people that are veterans of the league? No. Because they know better. They understand the rules.
But that's
your
answer. Those are veterans of the league. Mm-hmm. This is Antonio Brown's... He's a young player, okay? He's a young and excitable boy. This is his first trip into the playoffs, all right? He's already gone further than Odell Beckham. Because he didn't spend time after his day off hanging out in a boat.
Yeah.
He actually spent his time watching film and practicing. And oh boy, Beckham's going to have to answer for that all next season.
Yes.
You know, this is what Antonio Brown is going to have to answer for. And if the team loses on Sunday, which is a possibility, very strong possibility if you're a Patriots fan, but we're not going to call it a lock by any stretch of the imagination. If they lose on Sunday, guess what everybody's going to be talking about on Monday?
Mm-hmm.
Antonio Brown posted the video. How much of a distraction was that for the team? That's what these young players should understand. Even if you're fired up and you don't get the specifics of I shouldn't, you know, post Tomlin on social media, you should understand that everything you do is under a microscope. And any little mistake that you make is going to come back to haunt you.
Of course.
So,
but unfortunately, in the moment of celebratory situations, they don't think about that.
And Brown's having a great postseason. He's an excitable boy.
Yeah, but I mean, it's stupid for the Steelers to come back and say, you know, we are going to deal with this later.
Yeah.
The only reason they're going to deal with it is if, again, just like you said, if they lose.
He's not going to get canned from the team. He's
Antonio. No, of course not.
He's the best wide receiver in the NFL. Statistically, during the regular season. It's going to be between him and Julio Jones by the time this postseason is over.
No, and absolutely. The Pittsburgh Steelers are going to back him no matter what.
Yeah. And it's not. And if you're Mike Tomlin, it's not like you can be like, you're sitting on the bench for the next game. It's Antonio Brown.
You got caught with your hand in the cookie jar.
You know, the worst thing for Mike Tomlin is, how do you even discipline this guy? You can't. Mm-hmm. He's one of the stars of your team. So all you can do is shame him publicly and hope that he gets it. And I actually liked part of what Tomlin said in that press conference because he made a point of saying, you know, Antonio Brown is young, he is talented, he is an impact player in the NFL, and things like this take away from that. And that was a very clear message that he was sending to Antonio Brown. You're great. You're brilliant. You're one of the best in the league. But when you do the stupid stuff, nobody cares that you're the best in the league.
Mm-hmm.
All they care about is that you're stupid.
Of course.
And that's what we've seen with, that's what we used to see with Dez Bryant, with all of his hijinks on the sidelines.
Well, how many times,
he's got that
especially
under control?
With the climate in the media, they're going to focus more on these social antics than they are. Because what? That gets readers. That gets a buzz.
Odell Beckham Jr.
That gets clicks.
We heard about him fighting with the kicker's net and proposing to the kicker's net and all this stuff with the kicker's net. Then he's off on the boat. You know,
saw that plastered all over the headlines of sports.
You got a great big bullseye on you if you're one of those players.
No, and as a writer for sports, these are the angles that they look at. Oh, the team lost. Why?
Yeah.
Not because subpar performance in the playoffs, they look at, oh, is this a distraction? Because it needs meat. It needs a story.
You've been a sports writer.
Mm-hmm.
You know it gets down to a formula. You know, you sit there and it's like, Beckham made another great catch. And it's like, how many weeks can you write about this player is great and find different ways of saying this guy's the greatest and he's the heart of the team and all the rest? Even when
it becomes redundant.
Even when it's true, you're writing the same story over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody goes and hangs out on a boat on their day off. That's new.
And that's one thing that I hate about, you know, you make a really good point because that's what sports journalists are supposed to do and talk about the games and under the plays, whether it's in print or broadcast journalism. But the state of sports journalism has become such of that sensationalized, who's, you know, cheating on who and who's a distraction, you know, what girlfriend's a distraction for what quarterback. And these are the stories that they focus on because these are the stories that they think people want.
Yeah, but that's the Huffington Post clickbait world that we live in.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the stories that some people want.
No, of course. And
whether or not they should be published is a different
matter.
An avid sports
fan is going to know the correct places, just like if you were looking up news, we know the correct places to go for reliable sources.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, is the game at home?
Yeah, the game's at home.
Are you going?
I'm going.
You sound so bummed.
I got home at 2:30 in the morning from the last one.
Yeah.
Which was not
You know. It was funny. I was watching the game with my boyfriend. I'm like, Derek must be hammered by now because it was very, very cold. And compared to a few days earlier, it was 50 degrees.
Actually, surprisingly, it was about 24 degrees throughout the game. Not that bad.
Yeah. There was, was it not that bad because you had consumed a half a bottle of Telemer Dew?
No. I mean, yes. but there was no wind.
Yeah.
It was completely still.
Which is odd for Gillette because I feel like it has a giant wind tunnel that's just...
Especially up where we are in the nosebleed seats. But it was... I had two layers on. I was fine. I was warm. I wasn't sitting there. I'm freezing to death. It was like... I got stiff over the course of the game, mm-hmm. but I never got cold. So...
Yeah, I saw some pictures. Looked like you had a good time.
And weather-wise, this weekend's supposed to be even better.
Well, today in food news, we learn Boston may be catching up with the times with regards to alcohol. Massachusetts Treasurer Deborah Goldberg is throwing open the doors to the most extensive rethinking of how the state regulates alcohol since the end of Prohibition, directing a new task force to create a more cohesive set of rules that deals with, quote, the 21st century. With no limits from Goldberg on the issues that they may consider, a group of seven legal and political figures with input in the public and bars, brewers, distributors, and other companies will have broad authority to set its own agenda when it meets for the first time in later January. Among the issues that officials and industry executives suggested could be reviewed, extending the hours for package stores, lifting caps on liquor licenses in each municipality, allowing beer makers to switch distributors more easily, loosening restrictions on consumers bringing alcohol into restaurants or reusing growlers, boosting funding to the chronically understaffed Alcohol Beverage Control Commission, or clarifying rules about the so-called pay-for-play incentives. Many recommendations would require approval by the Massachusetts legislature, and lawmakers have been reluctant to make comprehensive changes to state alcohol laws, in part because of heavy lobbying by some members in the industry.
You are never, ever, I'll tell you what you can take off of that list right now. You are never going to get
a liquor license,
a state mandate on liquor license caps that Absolutely. Supersedes the cities and towns. Mm-hmm. They will not allow it.
I agree. It's a great idea. The one thing that I really do hope gets pushed forward in this is the distributors. I believe that companies should, and especially where here in Boston, we are having a major, not only Boston, outside Metro West, even on the North Shore, a huge influx of craft brewers. Also, craft ciders. These people need to go through a distributor to then sell in each store. I think that's ridiculous.
And the distributors are, in some cases, little more than thugs who are either bribing or beating their way into the tap lineup in local bars.
No, I mean, what distributors do... even besides levy attacks, you know, on the whole process, that's all they try to do. And they try to make as much money on it. It should go from A to B.
Yeah.
There should be no middleman. It's never going to change unless he's abroad. Massachusetts, though, tries to create a task force because that's what we are so good at. More taxpayer dollars to even put these on the table.
I don't think the vast majority of patrons at bars and restaurants understand just how much pay to play there is in that space mm-hmm. in and around the city of Boston.
Absolutely. I mean, distributors hold a huge, you know, stranglehold on the industry.
Who was it that got busted for the straight up cash payments last year?
That was Craft Brewers Guild in connection with Pretty Things Craft Beer that was out of Cambridge.
Yeah.
Essentially,
they were just flat out walking into bars and saying, here's money, put us on the taps.
Yes, and the bar that we frequent after the show, when I used to live above it, I had a conversation, and this is when Pretty Things was very, very popular. And I said, why don't you have some of their popular flagship beers? And he said, the owner of the bar said, you know, we contacted them, but they needed to, because most brewers will give specialty glasses, you know, coasters. Pretty Things required all the bars to only serve their beer and in threatened bars if they weren't served in this special boot, but they had to buy them. They had to purchase it. So not only are you purchasing all the vehicle for it to be poured into, you have to also buy the tap and the beer, which is crazy.
There's other stuff that goes on, too, where it's like they'll throw you a couple of free kegs.
Of course.
So that 100% of what you earn off of those kegs is yours. It's another form of bribery. Yeah, it's another form of bribery that takes place.
Notorious for that, allegedly.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people in the industry.
Yeah.
And they say that. You think of these local companies being like, oh, let's, you know, drink local and support them. Well, many of them are not playing by the rules.
No.
One thing I do agree with, I think it should be open more to especially smaller businesses that don't have the means to get a liquor license to be able to have BYOB. Maybe not so much in Boston proper, but outside of it.
I have never liked BYOB. I
think there need to be certain limitations on it, but I absolutely have no problem if somebody's bringing in a bottle of wine into somewhere that cannot, because we're talking about the city of Boston. Most liquor licenses are costing more than the actual business.
But here's,
say somebody purchases, you know, a property for $125,000, you're not getting a liquor license for under $500,000.
But that's because of the cap on liquor licenses. And the cap on liquor licenses,
which I think, though, is completely unfair. I mean, it makes it almost impossible for a company to start up or a restaurant to start up with that.
But it also keeps downtown Boston from being like Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah. And I'm not going to get into it with you because we've had a very, very long, drawn-out fight on this. Me being in the industry, I know it. Not that I know it more, because you know a lot on the subject,
yeah,
but we have different opinions.
Well,
on
you look at it through your narrow lens of how do we get more restaurant jobs and places for Lisa to get hammered. I look at it as
I look at it as the quality of life issue. I look at it as a potential business owner who I do in the future. I would absolutely love to own a restaurant, and I plan to do it in years, but the situation is, in Boston, it cannot happen. I do not have...
You don't want to own a restaurant in Boston. There's no parking.
No, I know, of course. I would never do Boston. Anyways,
yeah.
But regardless, if somebody wants to open a shop, say in the South End, and has a new concept, they can't. Unless, one, a business closes, and you get it on auction for, you know, upwards, again, of... I think some of them are in the Seaport. We're going for $1.2 million.
Yeah, because there's only a handful of them. There's only a handful of them down there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean those liquor licenses. When Jimmy Tingle sold the Somerville Theater, the liquor license was worth more than the theater because he actually had a Union Square liquor license,
mm-hmm.
and those have been maxed out forever. So that's, you know, I get your point. My problem with BYO in restaurants is you have a restaurant staff that has not been hired for its ability to handle intoxicated patrons, and you're basically asking them to handle intoxicated patrons.
And this is why I say
I think it's a lose-lose situation.
That I agree with it, with certain limitations and certain requirements. And by requirements, I mean every single person that is in that restaurant needs to be certified and serve safe and tip certified so they understand the proper procedure by Boston that the ABCC requires.
Yeah, I just don't think that you get the same level of responsibility from patrons in
you
that
have
situation.
Mm.
And they're not going to... If a bartender tells me I've had too much to drink, I recognize the bartender as an authority. Okay.
And then what did I just say? With limitations.
I may throw a couple
certain ounce wise. And if you were trained properly to only allow, if you have a party of four, it can only be one bottle of wine.
You're missing my point here. If a bartender tells me I've had too much to drink, I recognize his authority. I may throw a couple of punches at him on my way out the door and call him bad names and say he's wrong, but he's probably right. If somebody working at a restaurant that does not serve alcohol tells me I've had too much of the booze that I brought into the establishment to drink, I am going to tell them to go F themselves.
Well, maybe that's your...
I'm going to tell them that they need a horse shirt. Okay? That they're asking for a horse shirt because it's my booze.
No,
I
of
paid
course.
For
is
it.
Every single
you didn't
person
serve it to me.
Going to understand that the business has the authority to pull alcohol away if they feel that you've had too much? Most people would.
Yeah.
But will some people go against that? Yes.
Yes. I think more people will go against that than you would expect.
But again, I think it's the same percentage-wise of people getting angry at me when I cut them off.
Donald Trump won Wisconsin. This is what we're up against. Mm. Remember this. Donald Trump won Wisconsin. That's why that's a bad idea. In technology news, Mark Zuckerberg told a court he had never heard of ZeniMax Media, the company that is suing Facebook for $2 billion. ZeniMax claims that code used to power the Oculus Rift virtual reality system was stolen from them when a former employee left to work for On Oculus. John Carmack, the engineer who left ZeniMax for Oculus, admitted under oath that he took documents from ZeniMax that included lines of code developed while he was a ZeniMax employee and said the source code may have been included in email attachments. ZeniMax is widely known as the owner of id Software, developer of the Doom series, and Bethesda, which publishes the Elder Scrolls and Fallout series. So I'm guessing that Mark Zuckerberg has never played Skyrim. Which, you know, if you're Zuck, you got Facebook to run. Maybe you don't have time for Skyrim. I would think he at least heard of Skyrim. Mm-hmm. That he's at least heard of ZeniMax Media.
He's a very smart man.
They are one of the biggest software publishing companies in the United States of America.
Yeah.
And they advertise a lot on his platform. Mm-hmm. So, wild guess.
That's like a Hillary Clinton saying, what, wipe it with a cloth?
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like a head scratcher in saying, no, you do know what we're talking about.
I just play the stuff and I know who ZeniMax Media is. I am going to go out on a limb here and say that this case does not look very good for Facebook right now. As much as Carmack is, you know, gone on the stand and said, no, this lawsuit has no basis. He also went on the stand and said, yeah, I took some documents with me. I took some code with me. And after he left, he subsequently hired half of his engineering team from ZeniMax to go work at Oculus. So between the people and the admission that, yeah, I probably took some emails and some snippets of code, I think Facebook's got a problem on their hands.
Do you think they're going to be awarded the $2 billion?
I don't know that they're going to be awarded the $2 billion, but, you know,
Does that seem like a lot to you?
That seems like a small amount given what the
really
potential future value of the Oculus Rift is.
Okay.
When you invest $2 billion in something like Oculus, you're not doing that for a quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking at Oculus and saying, this is the entertainment device of the future. This is going to be like the television. Everybody's going to have one in their house. And we want to be the ones that own that technology.
Well, think about the just opportunities that it, I mean, you can pretty much do anything with it. And we were talking about when you first brought it, I think it was in our segment for What's Hot, when you were talking about the Oculus Rift and saying it could be used for in classrooms and in understanding, not just reading in a textbook, what it was like to live in Roman,
right,
you know, ancient Rome, but you can actually go there and see it.
Well, at the moment, apparently, you can use it to make people sick and not much else. Mm. So we got a ways to go before it's, you know, completely ready for prime time. But this is still potentially a massively important technology. And this is WMFO Medford.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Clouds are hanging around for the next couple of days. Tonight, temperatures are going to fall down just around the freezing mark. Possibility that you might see a few snowflakes mixed in with the mist. Possibility of a little bit of ice and slush, especially as you get outside of the city of Boston and outside of 495. Do be careful if you're on the road tonight. Rain will be with us for pretty